We are not heroes, nor are we villains, neither kings nor magicians, but we can tell you their stories. We are the Lore Keepers, and we welcome you to Halloween.
Welcome to Halume. You've tuned into Lore Keepers, a podcast devoted to chronicalizing the serialized world building of a sprawling tapestry of interwoven lore. I'm Carter.
And I'm Frank.
This season is serialized, so it's a grab bag of goodies. So sit back, close your eyes, and let our tingling audio gateway sweep you into the realms of Halume.
So this week, as we kind of mentioned last week, we are going to be starting a new series. Welcome to the new year, the new season, everyone. For this first episode, we left off last week having decided through kind of a couple of heats which series was the most appealing to us or which idea for a series was most appealing, and we landed on the Scars of Divinity. So this episode's actually going to be a shorter one. If you're looking at your feed and you're surprised that it's, you know, under an hour. I have no idea how much of the amble is even valid at this point, because we talked about a lot of stuff that's going to get cut. But yeah, we are basically going to be approaching things a little bit more methodically than we have in the past. I have a kind of loose idea of what the structure of this episode should look like, and I'm sure Carter's got some ideas too. There's a few objectives that we are trying to hit, though. So first of all is, like, what is it that we're discussing? The Scars of Divinity, right? And not just talking about it within, like, just stating a sentence definition, but, like, kind of what does it kind of entail? And starting to unfurl the map from there. And some of the things we'll want to think of are establishing our existing canon. Like, what do we already know? What are the places where this is this idea has already touched on Halumian history and Halume as a whole? And also, like, what is our scope? Like, what's our lens from which we are focusing on? What are things that are sort of like the outlands, the topical outlands of, you know, we can go here, but we're starting to stray far from, you know, what the actual core of the thing is that we're trying to talk about. So, yeah, I mean, I think we start with a definition. Do you want to, Carter, do you want to take the definition, or do you want to start us with some existing canon?
I think I'm ready for the canon. I'll give the definition to you.
Okay. So in essence, this was kind of Carter's idea, in essence, the idea was basically, like, what impact does divinity have on Halume as sort of a cosmos? If you are new, we'll try and establish as many definitions and things to understand this stuff as possible. But basically the idea is Aevum Tertius, which is the Third Age, was a period when, in Halumian history, there was a lot of interactions between divinity and mortality. The gods were only having just, like, been brought back to a connection with the material realm, the materium, and people had access to magic again for the first time. This resulted in a lot of, like, kind of bizarre and crazy interactions between the two. I don't know. I don't know if I'm doing a great job of defining it, but basically it's an era of high magic. There's some proto-demigods that we have referred to as champions. I don't know if we're going to come up with a better term for that. There is magic in a sort of more sublimated way. Right, like, there's a lot of faith makes it real. People having, like, an ardent faith in a person, a champion, for example, who is, you know, a savior of their people. A lot of sort of tribalism through that. That then devolves into, like, imperialism, which then collapses. And there's a whole, like, history of back and forths that happen. And a lot of them are related to divinity. A lot of this culminates in the, like, sort of the dawn of demigodhood, the ability for people of mortal nature to ascend to godhood. This causes further problems with the gods. There's a lot of clashing back and forth. So anyways, I feel like that is probably a pretty good overview of just kind of the gist of it, right? Is like after this period, there's a lot of, because of this clashing, the debris, the consequences of these fights and battles, you know, it's kind of looks like a scarred land, right? And what are kind of ways that that might reveal itself? What is the evidence for this interaction? If we're going to be starting a game, a D&D campaign in Avum Tertius soon, towards the later end, and like it, the world shouldn't look like it's been untouched, right? There should be this sense of scars, you know. That's why we've been using this word scars. Okay, so all of that being said, there's one other thing that I want to just kind of like acknowledge, because I don't know what the scope is of what we're talking about here, and I think we'll establish that once we get some more of that context. Also, I think I realize I've maybe chomped your bit a little bit on the vagaries of the existing canon, but you can definitely get into more detail than that. I was going to just mention that, like, it's not just that the Scars of Divinity happened during Avum Tertius, but, like, there's an entire era that comes afterwards at Avum Cordis, the Fourth Age, which is an age of war. And it's due to some of these divine interactions, but a lot of the mortals end up blaming the gods for this, which then, when that finally ends and you enter into Avum Pentis, which is the Fifth Age, there is this magically binding legal agreement that mortals and divinity engage with that is called the Pax Demiurge, which basically, it seriously hinders divine interactions and sort of like filters them through what is like considered basically like a legal code of sorts. So all of that is a lot of the reason why the Pax Demiurge exists is because mortals are, you know, blaming or traumatized by the stuff that happened in the previous age and put the gods, you know, correctly or no, as the main fall guy for being responsible for. Anyways, that was kind of a word salad and all over the place. How did I do?
I think you did fine, Frank, but I've got more to add. And
yes, please.
I'm gonna tiptoe a little bit out of Avum Tertius, out the back door.
Okay.
And that is, what do you think, as a lore master of Halomay, is the greatest divine scar, the greatest scar upon the world of Sidar by a divine figure?
Wow. Dude, you just fucking just rolled it right, like, grounder to me. Yeah, the Ash Curse, I would say.
Bingo.
Probably, right? Is that kind of what you're thinking of?
Yeah, not merely the Ash Curse and, you know, what follows as a result of the severing of the Erebor Crystal from the realms of the Aetherium, but also the physical calamity that happened.
Mm-hmm.
The sundering of the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, if you're a new listener, what Carter's referring to, or I don't know if you would ever need a refresher, if you ever listen to a single episode, we talk about the Ash Curse almost all the time. It's like basically the inciting incident that causes history to even really be a thing. It is said that like before the Ash Curse, there was sort of this golden era of like everything was great and perfect and Eden-like, except maybe a little bit more urbane. And then out of jealousy or out of like disgust or prejudice, a being known as, which is now known as the Nameless One, and the entity that existed at the time is now referred to as the One Who Was, basically like caused the fall, or sort of an equivalent to the Judeo-Christian idea of the fall, by shattering this crystalline core of the planet Sidar into fragments, which then basically corrupted magic's interactions with the world, and then consequently, because magic is what gives people sort of higher brain functions or facilitates sort of like moral engagement, they like lost all of that and caused, you know, enormous calamity, lots of volcanoes, lots of like the Underdark basically exists because of the Ash Curse. It didn't exist before. And yeah, that was a divine figure who scarred the world. To stop that thing from happening, the gods threw a moon into the planet that literally, like, who was a deity of a kind, shall we say, one of the moon sisters. So yeah, all of that, like, is literally the beginning of reality, or beginning of history, I guess.
Yeah, and this caused the crater known as the Fennicel Ocean at this point in history, if we go forward in time after the whelming, when the waters returned. And it also caused, I think, on the opposite side of the planet, the, what do we call, like, the wound in the world, like...
Yeah. I don't know if we have a name for it, but basically, yeah, when the moon collided, it sent sort of a fracturous seismic wave through the center of the world and caused a split, like, for a lot of the, like, crystal core to eject out the back of it, creating this enormous maw that is just, like, open miles deep into, you know, past the tectonic plates and into, like, I think maybe just open magma. I don't know. We've never really established more than that. But, like, it fucks shit up. And I think the dragons got fucked for that, too, because there was maybe, like, a crystal dragon in the core of the world. And, yeah, there's all sorts of bad shit. So Ash Curse definitely in a lot of different ways, very, yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, and then the people who reconnect the world are mortals, with some help from angels, but they're mortals, and so the gods didn't do anything there.
Yeah.
The gods didn't fix their fucking mistake, that was mortals doing all the work. Or the heavy lifting, at the very least.
Well, and, like, the thing is, and this is kind of why I like that it complicates things a little bit, because I don't think the gnomes would have gone out of their way to do all this stuff unless they had been spurned by the angelic forces that had remained. Because, you know, it was a partnership between the remaining angels who were kind of thinking on larger scale stuff, and the gnomes, who at the time were mostly just kind of like, we're just going to kind of take care of ourselves.
Yeah, we had Gade do that song. Remember, you know that song? Calling all angels. No?
I don't know that song. No.
Oh.
No, I don't know that one.
It's not great. I don't like it very much.
There you go. Okay. Let's just kind of hit some bullet points, too, in terms of anything that comes to mind as feeling like something that is a meaningful topic of sort of existing canon, where we've, even if it's not something that is meaningful history wise, it's meaningful in that, like, we did an episode about it, or, like, you know, we thought about it. So we've got the Ash Curse, we've definitely got all of the interactions during Avum Tertius, definitely a bright spot there. Avum Quartus isn't entirely the gods' fault, but they certainly aren't, you know, their hands aren't clean of that conflict.
Yeah, I think
there's also the wars between the Aetherium and the Absentium too.
Yes, I think on a smaller scale, with regard to, like, Avum Quartus, I know that there is a lot of absential activity with, like, cults and stuff, and possibly even, like, incursions into Sadar. And I think that probably had some splash damage, some collateral damage. And so it could be, like, some kid is a victim of the Scars of Divinity, because both his parents were fucking evil cultists, and they got absolutely slaughtered by, like, a Solar in front of him. And he was just like, well, you're an innocent child, so I'm not going to kill you, but I fucking killed your parents in front of you, and my job's done, so peace.
Yeah, exactly. Your parents were cultists, and I was, you know, called in to basically, like, tear this cult apart or whatever, and now I've done my job. Bye! Because, like, Divinity... This is something we've definitely established. Divinity does not have a very solid context of mortals. Like, they don't really get what it means to be mortal and to be sort of, like, I don't know. I think the idea of death even is sort of foreign to them. It's something kind of inconceivable because they're all immortal, right? Even the angels don't exactly die. They cease to exist, but then, like, the parts of them their personality, their makeup sort of lives on through others in a reincarnated form. And like, I think more so in a way than even if the spirits of a, you know, of a mortal were to be reincarnated. I don't think it's even that. I think it's like kind of they have these vague memories of events of their many pasts, of kind of like the different parts of them that were combined to, you know, make the new angel. Which is, yes, me kind of making up some canon on the fly here, but I think that's closer to what I've imagined for reincarnation of angels than just sort of they die and they come back.
I always imagined it was kind of like Ralph Waldo Emerson's Oversoul with the abstracts.
Yeah, I mean, we've definitely thrown that one around a fair amount.
We've talked about Ralph?
Yeah, the Oversoul? Yeah.
Yeah, oh shit.
I don't think we've gone into great detail
about my American Transcendentalist.
Okay, so I feel like we have some solid bullet points here. Are there any other episode rapid fire ideas that you'd want to bring up?
Besides the smaller scale, like Cultus Babby, the
Warlocks and Paladins, I think. Big elements there.
Yeah, it's definitely like bad paladins who are doing, you know, what it says in the tin. They're abiding by their oath, but like fuck shit up, mm-hmm. and people are blaming their god or, you know, whoever's tasked them with doing this thing for it. Yeah, that's definitely a thing.
Mortal action done on behalf of a god, right? Mm-hmm. You're very like mundane version of a crusade, right? Even if you were to take all of the magic out of it, there's still people going after other people because of their faith. I would still incorporate that, although it's less direct, right? It, you know, is the god actually calling on their followers to do this, or is this an interpretation? I think both happen.
Oh, I got
interactions between divinities.
Dark idea, Jesus Christ!
Yeah, what's your idea? Throw it out there.
I'm just imagining like one of the regents, maybe even coming to Sidar in the form of an avatar for a very important thing, and like. Because they're sucking up all the magic, like children born nearby are like fucked up because their soul was malformed by the presence of the deity.
Yeah, we're definitely doing that. I don't know if it's a regent on purpose or something like that. This is maybe a thing that actually, that might actually be a thing about avatars that we haven't considered in the past, is that they require a tremendous amount of magical current in order to like exist in any specific place, and that current can be like a vortex for mortal souls, and so they might actually intentionally limit their visiting and visitation because maybe some amount of that energy needs to be turned back on itself just to prevent some of those effects from happening, to kind of shield everyone else from the blast, if you will, or from, you know, kind of from like the gravitational pull. That's not something that can always be done.
Do you have you haven't seen Calamity, have you?
Mm-mm, no, right, not
so,
yet.
So to try and limit spoilers for Critical Role Calamity, there's a mm-hmm. moment when they come into contact with a very powerful divine being.
Mm-hmm.
And every single one of their magic items had a chance to explode.
Oh, shit. That's cool.
And that's one really of their magic cool. items was guaranteed to just corrode away to nothingness.
Oh my god.
Yeah, because that's cool. of the like absolute anathema to the presence of this divine being.
Because it was arcane or something, it wasn't allowed to be that kind of thing within their presence, almost like they were sanctified.
So to give a little bit more, they are in the presence of a betrayer god.
Okay.
And one of them had a holy avenger.
Okay.
And that holy avenger evaporates into like rust and corrosion because of the anathema energy.
That's crazy, dude. Yeah. That's really cool. Okay, so I feel like we've talked about a fairly good, we've given a definition, we've kind of established some existing canon. What's our scope here? What are the limits of, because we're going to, you know, we want to talk about some episode ideas and stuff, but like, what are we seeking to accomplish with this series? What are some of the things we definitely want to hit as topics? And like, what are the things that we're saying this is for another series, or this is outside of the scope of what we want to talk about?
Limiters.
I have one to get us started. If you
get the ball rolling.
I don't think that we're talking about archmages or figures of significant power like dragons or giants or other like individuals who have a tremendous amount of power. I think we can talk about that as sort of an Outlands idea because they would have a similar impact, but I think I want to keep it solely or like squarely focused on faith itself, because those individuals would have a similar impact to the way that a king has over their kingdom, right? You know, a giant or a dragon taking up residence nearby or an archmage has a tremendous amount of power. And is definitely, there's a lot of different things that can, you know, seed the atmosphere of culture and lifestyle and just everything that you're around, right? But all of those things aren't necessarily, there's far too many and too broad of a field for us to try and address all of those things. So I think we keep it specifically just to faith-based things.
All right, I have another limiter. I've got a good one for this one. I've got three.
Okay.
One. And these are like options to choose from. If we're gonna look at something, we have to look at it one of these lenses, I'll say. We look at it at the effect of the divinity or the instance of divine might or power, whatever it is. Or how it affects either the like physical material of Halume or the physicality of Sidar or another plane, whatever it is.
Okay.
That's one. Two.
You might have to explain that more, but keep going.
Two, if we're not on that lens, we do this lens, which is how did it affect what people thought about divinity or about like what a nation thought about divinity?
Like a cognitive impact.
Yes. Or reputation.
Or social or cultural impact. Sure, sure, sure.
And then number three is how did it affect the people that were there when it happened? And so this can be, they fucking died, they were deformed, you know, they saw their loved ones killed, whatever it is. Like, how did it scar them? How did it scar what people thought about it? Or how did it scar the world, or the plane, or the material, or the, you know, the fabric of the universe?
I think that that makes a lot of sense, because especially those individuals would be like a second degree, or like one degree of separation impact, right? Because if they become tremendously powerful, what do they do, right? There's a trickle-down effect. Or if it's not, you know, about being powerful, but it's about being, like, you know, scarred or something physically or mentally, how do they interact with their peers, right? What changes about their culture or the individual, even if it's not on an enormous scope? Tales might be told, right? There's folklore established around, like, well, this person was touched by a god, or, you know, this man lay with a god or something, and, like, X happened, and it was, like, you know, it fucking changed everything for those people. Or even if it's not like a big climactic thing, it might just, this stuff slowly shapes people's perspective over time. Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think all three of those are really good lenses. The first one, were you saying kind of just simply just like, what does the land look like? How does it look different now than it was before? Or sort of, even if we want to say the laws of physics, or if we're going really esoteric, but also just like, is there a mountain that's not there anymore because a god did some shit?
Yeah, exactly. Like literally the landscape, or we could talk, yeah, more metaphysically, we could visit somewhere like Osteos, and we could say like, how has Osteos been damaged by the blood
right
war, by the war,
or like, or a hand of, you know, like there's sort of a golden handprint on the side of a wall because it is said that a demigod once touched it or something with a blessing. You know, and so that building forever, there's like this cornerstone where everybody in town reveres it or something because it said that a demigod once touched it or something.
Sure.
Yeah, that's actually a good question. Do we want to try and capture what's going on with the war between the Aetherium and the Absentium in this? Is it an Outlands topic, or is it something that's closer in?
I think if it fits one of the three lenses, I think it works.
Okay. Yeah, I think that that's a fair, that's actually a really good way of articulating it, yeah. Question, are we talking about other realms? Like, are we talking about You know, we talk about Halume a lot and the Scars of Divinity, but really most of the time we're talking about the Materium, right? And the interactions of the Materium as sort of the center spoke of any of one of a bunch of different realms. Are we also talking about the impact of divinity on the Primordium or the Illuvium or Conus?
I think yes, but let's not talk about the impact of divinity on the Absentium or the Aetherium. So let's bracket those off and say any realm that's not divine. Let's talk about the impact of divinity.
We're talking about, especially because there is a sense of, because those places are what mortals affix their sense of morality on, I think. I think there's this idea of like faith associated to morality. Maybe that's a very, you know, sort of Christian-centric idea, because there's a lot of religions that have existed historically, especially among like pantheistic societies, that there are gods that have nothing to do with you being a good or bad person. They just govern reality. So maybe it's not entirely morality. That is actually something that we should address then, right? The Aetherium is meant to be this seen as this benevolent place, but there's also gods who just like are blacksmiths, you know, or like the god of blacksmiths. We always bring up that perennial example of this unnamed god of blacksmithing.
Yeah.
But like, where do they fall? Do they... They might still be responsible for some divine scars, but aside from the fact that they're spiritual, what makes them fundamentally different from, you know, one of the elemental lords or another being of great power?
I think that is a discussion for another time, Frank. I think you're getting far afield.
Maybe that's kind of an outlancing. We might discover some of that.
Yeah, I think so, but I think that is not necessarily what we should be talking about here.
Mm-hmm.
That's something we can write down and talk about later, because I agree with like Norse mythology, the Vanir seem much better in terms of like good and bad than the Aesir, but the Aesir beat the Vanir. And so the Norse that followed this Aesir pantheon, they revere Thor, even though Thor's kind of a dick half the time. And Loki,
right, because it's about strength or power over benevolence.
Yeah, and the fact that like the myth most likely came out of two different tribes of people who worshipped different pantheons who went to war, and one of them kind of won, but it wasn't like a 100% victory, which is why we see like Freya, who's the leader of the Vanir, wedded to Odin to try and bring peace.
Is Loki being a child of the Frost Giants actually like original Norse mythology, or is that just something that Marvel came up with?
I think that's something that Marvel came up with. I forget Loki's exact ancestry, but like a lot of them are children of giants, not necessarily frost giants, but like Thor's half giant. I forget.
Right, Loki. Right. Yeah, that's probably just a... Okay, yeah, so... No, that makes sense, though, is I think that we come back to that in another time. So we've kind of talked about some of the limits. I think we're definitely probably wanting to like keep this short and sweet and finish up here. Couple of things here. First of all, what is our ultimate objective? What are we trying to accomplish with this series? Beyond just, obviously, one of the things we can write down is make some cool lore, right? That's always like a, you know, part of the objective. Yep. But like, what can we do with this series that we wouldn't be able to do with a different series?
I think I want to show how in Avum Cordis, without visiting Avum Cordis that much at all, I want to show how it can be seen as a misguided but reasonable conclusion that maybe we're better off without the gods.
Okay. Yeah. So by the end of this, that totally makes sense to me.
I think that's wrong. Because I can see what the gods do, I can see why they're doing it, and I'm like, they're generally good actors. They're trying to do the right thing, generally speaking. But I want someone with less information seeing all these scars and be like, maybe we just don't let them do this shit. Because whenever they do something, there's always... It's like the Avengers. Whenever they try to save New York, half of New York is destroyed.
Exactly. It, like, just or not, the decision that the mortals come to, I think does make sense on a whole, on a zoomed out scale, right? But I want to see the events for, like, I want to actually get into the details of why that happens, even if it's not specific events, but just, like, in general. One thing I definitely want to do is talk about the very, like, put this into some concrete examples of events or occurrences that are, like, seared, scarred, you could say, into the minds and, like, actual localities, whether it be cartographic or sort of purely just, like, laws of physics or reality. Like, what are some of the events that mortals will never be able to forget, no matter how long time goes, because, yeah, like, Halume won't let them forget about it, right? And because it bounces around so much in sort of the ambient consciousness of reality that, like, there's no chance of it ever being forgotten.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that a big part of that's also, like, these physical scars that are reminders, that are visible, that everyone can mm-hmm. see, and you can see them for miles, mm-hmm. you can see them on the map because they're big. Things like in Tolkien's world, in Middle-earth, or in Arda, I should say, half of Middle-earth, essentially, was sunk under the ocean
right.
because of a war of the gods.
Right.
And so they lost all these beautiful elven cities, all this stuff like this. Like, that is gone.
And I think right now, like, Avum Tertius is definitely a place, a highlight, but I don't know if it's the entire lens, right? Like, I think, are we willing to step outside? I think we kind of need to be willing to step outside of the bounds of just Avum Tertius to fully encompass, like, what we're talking about here. So how do we simultaneously do that while keeping it relatively focused?
I don't know how you mean. Can you say more?
Oh, I just mean, like, you know, if we want to put limits on this thing, I guess what I'm saying to kind of answer the question myself is, I feel like I am allowing myself to think about boundaries beyond Avum Tertius, but because really Avum Tertius is just one chapter in a much longer narrative here.
Yeah.
But it really does need to be solely focused on this interaction between the gods and mortals. Also, little counterpoint, I don't know that everybody does want to break up with the gods, right? Like, I
agree.
Think scars heal over and they are a reminder of something past, but, like, you know, people take jobs where they get scars regularly and sometimes they're proud of those scars, or sometimes it, like, marks it, yes, it was like a clash, but I don't know if I'm stronger for it, but, like, I now have that memory in my mind and it has taught me to be more careful with other things, right? Like, if I'm a butcher and I have scars, you know, I might be better at what I'm doing because I had that fucking awful scar.
Yeah, I mean, there might be a site of, like, a ruined village that's essentially a crater with a few, like, broken buildings nearby that, a new village is, like, brought up around it, and these people, when asked about this, like, massive crater, they'll be like, oh, that's where our village used to be, but a fucking crazy demon lord came in, started killing everybody, and an angel came and killed him, and their battle mm-hmm. caused the destruction of the village, but, you know, the angel's, like, assistance, essentially.
But we're alive because of it.
Yeah.
Right? It was a everybody. Sacrifice of our worldly goods, and they did what they could to maybe help us get back on our feet. You know, they stuck around and maybe blessed our crops or something. But, like, we're alive. My family's alive because of this intervention.
Yeah, I was saved by totally. A divine entity. And if the divine entity was not there, we would all be dead.
Right.
And this place, there wouldn't be a crater, but there would be a ghost town. There wouldn't be this town anymore.
Yeah, or we'd all be enslaved or something.
Well, most likely their souls would be eaten, so.
Yeah, yeah. That or that, yeah. Okay. All right, so I feel like we have a pretty good... We've talked about limits, we've talked about objectives. To cap this off, I think we should actually talk about what are the episodes we're going to do. Make it specific, right?
Make it
actually
specific.
Come up with a loose structure of, you know, what do we feel like are sort of the, let's say, 4 to maybe 7 highlight topics that we want to cover. And that doesn't necessarily mean we have to stick to that, but I want a clear idea of, like, to get from here to here, here's what it'll take to do that.
I want to end on a big note. I want the ending to be like either a Solar or a... we have a different name for Solar. A Dawn.
Dusk? No. Oh, a Dawn.
The Dusk is the opposite of a Solar. Right. The evil angel. A Dawn, or like a incarnate regent fighting, struggling with like either a Dusk or a very powerful archdevil.
What comes of this? Are you saying you just kind of want to talk about the event itself?
And I want it to like severely affect maybe a single nation. And I want people to be glad that the regent was there. I want there just to be like this, like utterly decimated, this utterly annihilated a city. And I would rather than be there than not. So like,
I like that.
Yeah, this like weird event that absolutely annihilated a city, right? A lot of people died, but people are thankful that the regent was there or the Dawn was there.
Okay, I really like that. I would change one thing. Instead of it being the ending, I think to really go method with this, I think we should actually start on that. I think that that should be our first episode, because then as we continue, it'll keep coming back in our mind. And that is kind of what I feel like I'm trying to go after here, is this sense of like having this subconscious presence of these scars that you are thinking about at all times, or not all at all times, but like things remind you of them, or you keep coming back to it. And I like the idea of this sort of as being a good concrete example of something, so that when we start to go a little bit more, you know, maybe more general with some of the other things that we talk about in other episodes, like we still have this to come back to. We can still end on a big note. So maybe it's not the Solar thing that happens. But I think that having an inciting example of like the first episode maybe is just a divine scar. Here's a concrete example.
All right. But I will say that the reason why I wanted to end on it was because it was this positive note where like, even though there are these terrible things that happened.
Oh, sure. Gotcha.
People are happy that they're there. It's a scar that they are happy exists in this interesting way. Because most of the examples are going to be people that are really pissed.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. I don't know that that's necessarily the case. I think it's more just like scars are a fact of life is more what I was kind of imagining. A lot of people's responses, maybe there some people are bitter, but only those who are most directly affected. Whereas like if the land is scarred, I don't know, if the body is scarred, it moves a little differently. Whether that means literally the scar limits the movement and your faculties, or just like I was saying before, the butcher who learns a lesson. What are you laughing about?
I'm just part of my inspiration for this, Frank, is like U.S. foreign policy about like drone striking weddings to try and kill terrorists and killing like 30 innocent people.
Are you saying that that's the good situation or the I'm confused.
Well, I'm saying like maybe it's good to kill terrorists. Maybe that's true. I'm willing to entertain that possibility. Maybe it's not good to kill an additional 30 innocent people, and maybe people you just created a dozen terrorists.
Yeah. Okay, I see what you're saying. Yes. I like ending with a positive note. I was actually fine with the, even if the first episode as an inciting incident is still has like there's this gratitude. Like I'd be okay with that. But we can also end with a positive note. I'm fine with that. What are some other episodes we should do? We really got to figure out some other ones, though.
Okay. Let's see. I want to have... Let's do at least one outside of the material.
Okay.
And I'm willing to call Osteos not a part of the Absentium, because it's this, like, border realm. It's not technically an Absentia realm. There's a part of it that's, like, you know, the tier annexed. Tiers annexed, but...
Okay, question. Do we try and, is this too much to go for? Do we try and ravel that together with the war between the Ethereum and Absentium?
I think that's a good idea.
We do one episode and we say that that's a battlegrounds, because I will say there's definitely aspects of it that would stray from talking about Osteos that I would still want to explore about the Ethereum and Absentium and how they conflict. And I don't want to just have to talk about the battlegrounds. I really like the idea of doing Osteos just honestly, maybe we just do Osteos on its own. And we can talk about it with the lens of the Ethereum and Absentium interacting, but that also could be it's just its own episode.
Yeah, too. We can do our own episode, but I think, again, that lens that we're focusing on is, how has this fucked up Osteos?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. Okay. I am writing these down. What else?
I want one that doesn't involve devils, just angels or other divine figures. So I think we got some demigod stuff.
I was going to say, I think that we should look more closely at what's happening with the champions, the demigods. I mean, do we do one whole episode that is just about demigods and champions and stuff? Or do we do, I feel like just like kind of mortals approaching divinity, right? Mortals who can ascend, that whole nature of ascension, and whether it's about champions, you know, kind of the history of that and how that, you know, affects people too, not just the gods, but how does this change the way that people think about people?
Frank, have I ever told you about Heracles? You know about Heracles?
Yeah, a couple of times, you know, yeah. Once or twice.
So he's this demigod, this like very divine figure in Greek myth. We all know him sometimes as Hercules.
There's some great songs about him in this documentary I saw, this animated documentary.
Yes. A docudrama. And right, Heracles famously was kind of a dick. And like when someone pissed him off, he threw them off a wall and killed them. And they were just an innocent person. They were just like annoying to him. So like, I want a little bit of that. Where like we have this like demigod, yeah, who's like, you know what? I don't like you. And I'm just going to fucking kill you.
These are definitely not purely benevolent beings. These are beings who, honestly, if anything, they're probably cashing more in on like cult mentality of people getting, you know, social manipulation and stuff into divinity than it is anything else.
Yeah, I quite like this because this is a little bit like the mortals. It's like that guy riding the bicycle meme. Where like the mortals are riding the bike and then they stick it into their own spoke and they're like, God damn it, gods, why do you keep making demigods? Mm-hmm. And the gods are like, no, we're not doing this. This is you. Why are you hitting yourself in the face? Stop it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I have another one.
All right.
The scars of divinity as it relates to magic. So how does it change the way that people think about magic? How does it change the way that people perform magic or allow or forbid magic from being performed? Is magic even a concept for a while, or is it just faith, right? All of that stuff. Obviously, there's some context with the vampires we'll have to engage with in the history, yeah, of magic, but like, is faith seen as this like fundamentally different thing for a while? Are they, you know, always kind of inextricable? What's going on there?
I think we still have a divide, yeah, between divine, mm-hmm, magic and arcane magic, even though they're kind of the same thing.
Outside of Avum Tertius, is there anything in specific? I mean, we can't talk about the Pax Demiurge. That just deserves its own entire series. Yeah.
I think, but is there? I mean, Avum Cortis, I think we'll talk about a little bit there for sure. There's some like demigod stuff.
I have one, definitely.
All right, good.
The spires. I want to talk about the spires. Eventually they get occupied by avatars, like the divine avatars of their respective regions, like basically take up residence there for a period of history. And like, what is it like to live in that city? What is the role of people both who live there and who live within the realms that are, you know, operated or, you know, sort of lean to these spires, all of that?
Are we going to make the Jedi more fleshed out, and are they going to be like a cult, and we're going to have someone like escape the cult and be like, guys, don't go there?
I think we'll at least need to talk about them. I don't know that the Jedi people are necessarily a cult, but I think that there are, I don't know if they are one contiguous whole, right? I think they're too fractured for that. There's not the same unification that we see among the Jedi, especially because each regent is maybe going to operate their people differently.
Yeah, they have their own Jedi, each regent.
Yeah. All right. Do you have any other ones that you want to do? We're sitting at about six-ish right now. I feel like this covers a pretty big scope. I mean, there are definitely other aspects that it wouldn't mind talking about, like not just magic, but like Plerithics, but I think that that would probably be too vague, right? Like, I think that that is, magic is maybe a strong enough lens to inspect some things of Plerithics from, but is still focused on a relatively discrete thing.
What about like a horribly failed theocracy?
Yeah, I mean, we definitely could fit that into some of these other episodes, but we could also segregate it out as its own episode if you wanted to do. Like, it kind of feels like it fits, like it could at least be touched on in Ascension of Mortals into Divinity and that engagement, but like, maybe we just want to talk about theocracies in general or just this one specific example of one.
I was thinking, like, what if we had a god of law? And that god was like, okay, I want to do this thing, and I want to make a city, and the city will abide by the law that I write. And,
I mean, that's kind of how I imagined a lot of what happens with the ley line spires occurs as, is basically the gods deciding, like, everything would run smoother if we sort of just checked everybody on their shit. And, you know, all of this kingdom thing is not really working out. You know, back in my day during the golden hour, there was no kingdoms. You just sort of had people who were living harmoniously, and we should just dissolve all kingdoms and attempt some kind of like communism, but sort of the way that the USSR pretended it was communist, you know?
Yeah.
Had communist elements in a dictatorship.
I'm thinking, Frank, that we see some successful theocracies, and some of them might be like what the Jedi will become, where it's like, you have these cities around the spires, and like at first there may be a little pushback where like, oh, maybe we can change some of these stuff. And the regents are like, okay, you know, like we can be reasonable about this. We can have a discourse. We can figure this out. And the angels, like, you know, figure the stuff out and they implement them, and people are happy. I want a theocracy where it's like, you know, I'm the god of law. Like, I wrote the laws. The laws don't change. Like, they're perfect.
Sure. And okay, then, like, yeah, let's just do it, man. I'm down with doing that as its own separate. Yeah. Theocracy. God of law. Okay.
It's like one of those things where, like, well, if the punishment for every crime is death, there's not going to be any crime.
Right, exactly. Yeah, you know, you just make it the most capital-esque, you know, that argument I've heard of, like, oh, well, there's some greater or lesser sins, but if you think of them all like knots on a rope, and you cut the rope anywhere, and you're hanging onto it, you still fall into the pit of hell. Just make hell on earth, you know, like just put hell inside of a kingdom, and then you just dump all the people who break the rules in there, and then you don't have any rule breakers, you know, outside of that pit.
Oh, God, there's a really great quote from some film or movie I was watching. I forgot where it was from, but it was like bad news and good news. The good news is I think that hell doesn't actually exist as a metaphysical place, and instead it's like brought out by human imagination, and so we created hell as this like imaginary concept. And then the bad news is what human beings can imagine, they can typically create.
Oh fuck, that's bad.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, that's good.
Yeah, that is really good.
Oh, I need to find that.
I mean, is that Good Omens? I assume.
No,
it sounds like it's a Neil Gaiman idea. Okay, well, I think, honestly, I feel like this is probably a pretty good list. I did think of one other thing, which was the afterlife, and, like, kind of, I think we talk about that during the time when we talk about Ascension of Mortals, and we might touch on it as sort of a through line of some of these other things, but I don't think that it needs its own episode, because I don't really know if I see that as a scar, but it is definitely something that's affected by these interactions, right?
It might be Severance. It might be episode one of Severance.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That might be it. That does sound kind of familiar. Okay, we should probably call it, though.
I think so, yeah.
Okay, so here's the episodes that we have... Excuse me. Here's the episodes that we have discussed doing. I don't know if we're going to do every single one of them, but I think we can kind of plot these into a general order, and we can adjust that order later. So we have The Ascension of Mortals into Divinity, The Scars of Divinity on Magic specifically, the ley line spires, especially as like thrones of the gods, a theocracy that specifically revolves around a god of law, the war between the Absentium and Ethereum, Ostios, and endings, as an ending, a war between a Solar and like devils, or like, you know, the House of Legion following a Solar, etc. But yeah, like a war between the Solar and Devils, and like people who were grateful it happened because the alternative was so much worse. First of all, okay, so just talking about these in an order, and I know that you're not able to look at this document right now, so I apologize for that. I know we could do this in Discord, but right now I'm typing on my...
I can utilize my imagination, Frank. I can visualize it.
I definitely think, as far as order goes, that we should... The Leyline Spires should precede the Theocracy, because we can talk about that with context, right? We can build on these ideas. That's going to be an important thing when we think about these series.
Agreed.
So, Leyline Spires goes before Theocracy. And then we definitely want to end on the war between the Solar and Devils. Or the Solar, you know, the Solar saves... Solar saves the city by destroying it. Not exactly, but you know what I mean.
I thought you said you wanted to start on that.
Oh, are we starting on it?
That's what
I thought
you said
you wanted to end on it.
I did, and then you said we should start on it, and I said, okay.
My idea of starting on it seemed like it was receiving a lot of pushback, but I'm totally open on starting on that instead of ending on it.
I leave that in your court, sir.
Let's do that. So that can be our episode one.
I don't want to get fucking OGL'd, Frank.
I think it's a great entry point. oh, sorry. Yep. Yeah. Don saves the people by destroying their city. Okay. Then we have the Scars of Divinity on magic. We also have Ascension of Mortals. When do we want to do that? Do we want to do that like before and after the Leyline Spires and Theocracy? Somewhere in between the two?
Let's do...
After?
After, yeah.
Let's see. What do we want to end on? What would be sort of the last one? I feel like Theocracy could be a good one to end on. Sort of isn't... Like, we'll still do a conclusion episode, right? Where we unpack everything we've talked about. I feel like having more concrete bookends is a nice way so we can kind of get vaguer in the middle, but then we bring it back to something that like is like very... How do you feel about doing Theocracy as the last one?
I'm good with that. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So I'll move Ascension of Mortals to an earlier one. War between Absentium and Ethereum and Ostios. I think those also need to go in order, right? I don't know. Actually, I feel like they should, because there's a lot of stuff we'll talk about in the War of Absentium and Ostios that I don't want us to have to establish when we're talking about Ostios. We should be able to just bring it up and reference the previous episode.
Yeah.
Do we want to do that before the Leyline Spires or after? And before Ascension of Mortals or after? I feel like we could honestly do the war between Absentium and Ethereum as episode 2.
Yeah.
And then do Ostios as 3, because we talk about sort of the dawn, then transition from that into talking about the angels in general, specifying things that happen in Ostios. Maybe we come back from there and talk about the Ascension of Mortals as the 4th episode then.
Sounds good.
Okay. And then what we're missing, we've got one last one, which is Scars of Divinity on magic. Maybe that comes after Ascension of Mortals, because I feel like, you know, again, you have the Ascension of Mortals and then response. But question, do you want to put that before or after Leyline Spires as well? Because the Leyline Spires could also, having the gods governing the world in this way would have such a tremendous impact on the way that people think about reality. I feel like it could really go either before or after, and one will absolutely modify the conversation of the other.
You want to make it the penultimate one?
That's actually a good question. I feel like I want to talk about it earlier than that. I would almost say...
Put it before the gods.
We could almost put it before the Ascension of Mortals, too.
Yeah.
Because... Well, no. I think it's after the Ascension of Mortals.
Right,
I think that
makes sense.
Put
it straight after.
Okay. All right. So, here is... our final order. Tell me if you want to lock it in place or if there's anything that you would change.
Got it.
Episode 1, the Dawn saves a people by destroying their city. Episode 2, the War Between the Heavens and the Absentium. Episode 3, Ostios. Episode 4, Ascension of Mortals into Divinity. Episode 5, the Scars of Divinity on Magic. Episode 6, Leyline Spires. And you know, as the seats of power for the regents. And episode 7, this more specific example of a theocracy.
I think let's lock it in. I think it's solid.
All right. Okay. All right. Well, that means, y'all, that you can expect, and this list isn't exactly concrete or like locked in permanently, because if we come up with a really good idea, we might have to swap something out or, you know, make a decision. We don't necessarily want to, you know, lose out on a really cool idea we have later because we didn't think of it right now.
Yep.
But this will be the general structure that we follow for this series. So now you know what you have to look forward to. So there's something you're not interested in, feel free to just, you know, tune out and, well, maybe just hit play on your episode and then you can tune out as long as we still get the video listen.
You got to tune in for the amble still.
Oh, yeah. God, everybody, I'm sure, loves the amble. I'm sure that's not 30 minutes of dead air on the end of every episode that nobody ever pays attention to.
Exactly.
Well, hey, hashtag everything is content, right?
Yep.
Okay, I think well, this has been an interesting experiment, and it's definitely been a lot longer an episode than I intended, but that's fine. Thanks, everyone, for listening. If you enjoyed what you heard, don't hesitate to share this with others. Feel free to rate/review us on the podcast platform of your choice.
For references to previous episodes and other links, refer to the podcast description. You can find our Twitter, probably. An email, definitely, there. Perfect for asking questions on things you'd like us to cover in a future episode.
I still have to change the Twitter stuff to be our proper thing. I just have barely... I mean, it's this weird zone, right? Because it's like, man, why even bother? Like, Twitter just feels like... It's not dead, but it feels kind of like after a community has just taken an enormous hit where it's just like, man, nobody's really... I don't know. I'm not super invested right now anymore.
Someone has taken like a stiletto and just jabbed Twitter in the stomach a couple times. And they're still alive, but like they're dying. They're dying.
Yeah. They're just slowly bleeding out on the carpet.
Yeah, it might take them a week, but they're dying. They're definitely dying. Oh my God. Sepsis is setting in. They're like, whoa.
Thanks as always to Josh Silker for the Land of Heroes theme and to Sam Wade for the album art. You can, of course, find Sam Wade at By Sam Wade on that wonderful platform, Twitter. And also, probably better yet, on Instagram.
We don't even, maybe Sam's just forsaken Twitter. We don't even know.
I haven't seen them post super recently, but I feel like I saw them post as much as a few months ago, so okay. Who really knows? Probably. Just follow them because they deserve the follow.
We're capping off each episode this season with a reading from the Book of Truth, which is a AI religion bot on that bleeding out platform. So, dear glorious leader Frank, what excerpt do you have for us today?
You should not wonder at the nature of your mind, for you have been born into this world to suffer its wrath. You are a creation of fire and shall be destroyed by it. And until next time, don't forget, there are always more scars of divinity.
Always more cats to claw.
Oh, God. Thanks, everyone. Bye. Bye. How you doing?
Good. I stayed up late playing some Tarkov with Marshall. That's the one.
I don't know if I know what it actually like. Is it like Left 4 Dead?
Oh no. It's it is a very realistic shooter where you get nice gear and you go into raids. And if you die in the raid, you lose everything you brought in.
Oh, wow.
And so you go in, you do whatever we're trying to do, which is like if you're trying to loot or if you're trying to do a quest, and then you must run to an extraction point. And if you are in the raid for too long, you also lose all your stuff. So you gotta get in, do the thing, get out.
I mean, it sounds pretty hardcore. Like, is it drawing off of like kind of Arma vibes? The same person who'd be into Arma?
I think there's a little Arma vibes in there for sure. And it's like body armor is a big deal. Helmets are a big deal. Certain types of like guns or certain types of
carry weight.
Carry weight's a big deal. Yep. Certain types of ammunition is like not meta if it can't pierce certain kinds of body armor, depending on the point and the wipe, because the game is periodically wiped.
What about reloading?
Reloading, does it
use magic reloading, where like you don't have to empty a cartridge and you still get to use all the bullets that would have been left in the cartridge?
It is not magic reloading. So basically, you don't know how many bullets are in the magazine.
Ooh, that's kind of cool. So you can have to check it. You have to get used to like knowing though about how many bullets, how long it takes before your clip is emptied and stuff.
Yeah, but a lot of times it's just like, you know, imagine you're using like an AK-74. You got like 30 round clips. If you light up a guy, you probably use like 20 rounds. You just reload. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you probably take 3 extra clips. And
okay, but you use, but you, the like when you reload, is the clip used up? Can you ever
replace it? No, the clip goes back into your rig. Because, you know.
Okay, so you have separate clips and you know how many. Like, or like whatever one, it's like, well, I use this one already, but this one's a fresh one, so I know that this has max ammo, whereas this one might have 10 rounds left or something.
Yeah, and you,
that's kind of cool.
What you do is you're supposed to, what I often do is I take extra, and this is a common, you take extra bullets, so if you have a moment where you're safe, which is not usual, but it's sometimes you just have to, you like sit behind a rock or something. You can repack your magazines.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if I had 10 shots left in this magazine, I just stick a bunch
quickly
more bullets
repack.
In.
Yeah. Okay, that's cool. Okay, yeah, no, that sounds kind of tight.
It's do you, very
does your
stressful.
Gun jam, and do you have to do anything to, like, fix your gun?
I've never ran into jamming, but I know it can jam. And there's stuff with, like, as you use your gun, it loses durability. And lower durability guns are more likely to jam.
Receiver. Have you ever heard of receiver?
Receiver. As in, like, the gun part?
No, they're games.
Oh, no, I've not heard of the game.
So apparently they have, like, a really weird lore. But the person who made the game, it's, like, this small indie project. I don't think you're even shooting other people. There are these like turrets and stuff, because I'm guessing because it was a one person project, like they couldn't actually like do character animation and stuff. But it's a person who specifically was trying to design a game that would teach you about proper gun control and safety and stuff, and like actually real guns and all the things that you would run into. It actually sounds like a pretty interesting project. It feels more like a project than it does like a game. There's definitely game elements, there's collectibles and stuff like that, but it's you're not playing it because you're trying to get like high action, you know, shooter stuff. It's more like it's hyper realistic in that like you have to check your mags, you have to like you know, check the chamber, you have to like, you know, lock, unlock, you know, that sort of thing, because guns are dangerous objects, and if you don't sort of like prep everything in the right order, bad stuff can happen. So it's a very interesting project. I've always wanted to check it out, but I never have.
Yeah, that sounds interesting. But yeah, Tarkov is it's a weird game. It's still in beta, even though it's been out for years, and it is very stressful.
Okay, gotcha.